Welcome to Becoming is Messy, where we dive deep into the journey of survival, transformation, and everything in between. I'm your host, Megan Dawson, here to share the honest, unfiltered stories behind my own process of becoming. Life isn't a pretty and perfect straight line, and neither is becoming the person we're meant to be. Here, we embrace the ups, the downs, and all the beautiful, chaotic, messy moments that shape who we are. Whether you're in the thick of change or reflecting on past transformations, this space is for real conversations about what it means to grow, stumble, and rise again. So get comfy, settle in, and let's get messy. Hello, messies. Today's episode is for anyone who's ever felt an intense connection and quickly thought, this has to be something special, right? If you've ever built an entire emotional universe around someone after one deep conversation, one spark, one text, if you've ever felt completely consumed by someone, like they lived rent-free in your brain and your heart raced every time they texted, or didn't. If you've created entire future plans in your head after a deep conversation or a flirty smile, if you've felt high off the possibility of love, only to crash into anxiety the second you felt distance, welcome. Pull up a chair. In this episode, we're talking about limerence, something I didn't even have a name for until a year ago, even though it's shaped my relationships for decades. And let me just say, once I had the name, I could finally confront my own obsessive behavior. So what is limerence? Let's break it down. Limerence is that obsessive longing for someone you feel deeply connected to, even if you barely know them. It's not just a crush. It's not just attraction. It's an emotional, mental, and sometimes spiritual fixation. And the wildest part? Most of the connection is happening in your head. You replay every conversation. You might analyze every emoji. You live for their validation. And when you don't get it, you feel like you're crawling out of your own skin. Sound familiar? Yeah, me too. And for years, I thought these interactions were special, often because I thought I was just somebody who felt so deeply, somebody who connected to people in this rare soul-level kind of way. But the truth, what I was calling connection was often obsession. All throughout my adolescence and well into adulthood, I experienced moment after moment that felt like fate. Like magic, like I just met someone who finally got me. But if I'm being fully honest, most of those connections weren't grounded in reality. They were about fantasy, hope, the possibility that this person could finally fill the void that I didn't know I was carrying. Looking back through the lens of healing and honesty, I can see those moments for what they really were. Limerence. For as long as I can remember, I've had obsessions with boys. As far back as kindergarten, I have memories of these types of deep feelings. My kindergarten class even held a fake wedding for my crush and me, with jelly rings and flowers. I thought about him all summer long. When he didn't talk to me after summer break, I was completely devastated. That type of experience repeated itself time and time again over my life. A conversation with a cute science partner, a smile from an older boy in the hallway, Hollywood crushes that I would not only hang posters in my room of, but also took the time to send letters to. They all became fantasies in my mind of something so much more than what they were. As I got older, it would be hookups and situationships that I believed were clearly my soulmates, or late-night deep conversations that were obviously signs of something so special. Time and time again, thinking there was some unspoken bond when in reality, none of these connections were ever that into me. Over and over again, I confused chemistry with destiny. I confused anxiety with love. And the wild thing is, throughout adulthood, I was in therapy. I was doing the work. But limerence? That word never came up. It wasn't until about a year ago that I even heard the term. And when I did, it was like someone handed me the missing puzzle piece to so much of my emotional life. So why does this happen? Why do some of us latch on to people in this way? For me, and for so many of us, the answer lives in my childhood, in the unpredictability, the trauma, the emotional whiplash, when love was chaotic or conditional in your early years, your nervous system adapts. It starts chasing connection like it's a survival need, because honestly, it was. That's where my anxious attachment was born. I learned to anticipate moods, chase approval, keep people close by morphing into what they needed. So when I met someone who was emotionally unavailable, my nervous system screamed, "This is familiar." The uncertainty was intoxicating. The crumbs of connection felt like a feast. And that's the trap of limerence. It feels like love, but it's built on adrenaline, not safety. It's the rush of almost, maybe, someday, instead of the grounded presence of right now. There was a moment years ago when I found myself completely consumed by someone who was never really mine. It wasn't even a full-blown relationship. It was more like this emotional limbo where we danced around feelings, never truly connected. And every time he'd disappear, I'd spiral. I'd question everything about myself. Until he'd show back up with a maybe someday ambiguity that kept me hanging on. Was I not pretty enough? Was I too emotional? Did I text too much? Was I not enough? It was exhausting. When was he going to finally fully show up? I kept shrinking myself to be chosen. Until one day I realized, I don't even know who I am outside of longing. Before I ever knew the word limerence, I had already started doing the hard work of healing. I had spent years in therapy unpacking the weight of my childhood trauma, the scars left by decades of medical interventions and the patterns I kept repeating in relationships. I had to face the painful truth that I'd spent a lot of my life giving away pieces of myself just to feel chosen or seen. Through that work, I slowly started to build something that used to feel completely out of reach. Genuine self-love. Not the shiny version we see in social media quotes. Not the performative kind that masks burnout with a bubble bath. I'm talking about real, grounded self-love. The kind that says, I don't have to earn love through exhaustion. I don't need to shrink myself to be worthy of being chosen. I deserve peace. I deserve presence. I deserve to feel safe in love. And once I had laid enough of that foundation, not perfected it, but laid it down just enough, I met Kelly. And here's something I want to be really honest about. I didn't heal because I met Kelly. I had done enough healing that when Kelly showed up, I was finally able to recognize him as safe. At first, though, that safety felt unfamiliar, almost boring. There was no chaos, no mixed signals, no long pauses between texts or sudden disappearances that I had to overanalyze. Just consistency, direct communication, emotional availability. My nervous system had no idea what to do with that. It was used to adrenaline and survival. It was used to chasing and performing. But Kelly, didn't require that. He never asked me to become anything other than who I already was. Over time, I started to believe that I could show up fully, honestly, and still be loved. Something in me softened. The part of me that had learned to equate unpredictability with passion, the part that mistook longing for love, finally had space to rest. But here's what I want to say out loud and clear. Especially if you've experienced limerence in your own life. Limerence doesn't magically disappear just because you find a healthy relationship. It still visits me. It tends to sneak in when I'm not fully grounded, when I've been over-functioning or drinking more than I should, or when Kelly and I feel disconnected, which, let's be honest, happens in any marriage. Sometimes it shows up when I meet someone who brings that spark. There's that feeling of emotional intensity, and for a brief moment, that old pattern taps me on the shoulder and says, "Hey, remember me?" In the past, that moment would have sent me into days of spiraling and self-questioning, but now I can recognize it for what it is. And one of the most powerful tools I've found is honesty. When it happens, I tell Kelly. I say something like, "Hey, something came up. I noticed a reaction in myself. I'm not proud of it, but I want to talk to you about it." And here's the thing. Kelly listens. He doesn't flinch. He doesn't judge or make it about him. He stays present. He holds space for me, not just for the woman I am today, but for the girl I used to be, the one who had to survive without safety, the one who built limerence, a coping strategy, long before she had the language for it. And in doing that, he helps me come back to myself. That's what love looks like. Not perfection, not avoidance, but honesty, accountability, and enough emotional safety to show up messy and still feel worthy. That's what helps me resist the old pull towards chaos. That's what lets me choose peace, even when the old story wants to resurface. If any of this sounds familiar, you're not crazy, you're not weak, and you're absolutely not alone. Here's what research and lived experience have shown, along with what has helped me on this journey. 1, name it. Say it out loud. Saying this is limerence gives you invaluable distance from it. This technique is a form of cognitive labeling, and studies in cognitive behavioral therapy show that naming an experience helps shift your relationship to it, transforming you from being in it to observing it. This one has been extremely helpful for me. It sounds so basic, but for real, it's been a game changer for me. 2, stop the rituals. Disrupt the loop. Whether it's scrolling their social feeds or replaying old texts, these behaviors reinforce the obsession. In fact, a case study showed that using ERP, exposure and response prevention techniques, facing obsessive thoughts without performing compulsive rituals significantly reduced limerence rituals over 9 months. Just refuse to collude with them. 3, journal the truth, reality over fantasy. Journaling is more than venting. Therapeutic writing, especially techniques like the Pennebaker method, has been shown to reduce stress and anxiety, depression, and trauma by helping you process what's real versus what's imagined. So when the fantasies start up, ask your pen, what actually is happening? 4, practice radical self-compassion. Self-criticism deepens spirals. Self-kindness interrupts them. Research from Kristen Neff and others shows that self-compassion, grounded in self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness does more to reduce anxiety and depression than self-esteem alone. Even brief self-compassion writing exercises can significantly improve emotional resilience. And 5, find a safe space. You don't have to go it alone. Whether it's therapy, think attachment-informed, cognitive behavioral therapy, ERP, EMDR, compassion-focused work, or a trusted friend or trusted partner, building support is essential. Integrative treatments that combine compassion training and CBT have been proven to decrease shame, rumination, and anxious reactivity. If yours is a relationship like mine and Kelly's, where you can hold each other in the hard moments, that is a sacred container. Rely on it. You deserve more than adrenaline-fueled peaks. You deserve to feel chosen simply for being you, not for what you perform or what you project. You deserve to come home to yourself again and again. And healing, it's not about perfection. It's about practice, patience, and permission to simply be human. Thank you so much for continuing to follow along with Becoming is Messy, for letting me tell the truth out loud, for reminding me yet again that we are never alone in our mess. If this episode stirred something in you, share it. Tag me, message me. Let me know how limerence has shown up in your life. Until next time, take a deep breath, show yourself some grace, and remember, you're not late, you're not wrong, you're right on time for your becoming. And yeah, it might be messy, but it's also oh so magic. Before we wrap today, I want to invite you to be part of the Becoming is Messy community. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And if there's anything that resonates with you, please leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps other people find this community. Follow me on social media. I'd love to hear your ideas for future topics, your questions, and stories from your own messy moments. And if you're feeling inspired, check out the Becoming is Messy shop, where you can grab a mug, a t-shirt, or something else that reminds you to embrace your messy magic every single day. A huge thank you to the incredible Wolves and Sheep for providing the music for Becoming is Messy. Check them out on your favorite music streaming platform. As we close out today's episode, remember this. Messy is just another word for growing. So keep showing up, keep laughing, and keep making beautifully awkward progress. Until next time, stay messy, my friends.